You're listening to WOBN 97.5, The Wild Card. I'm Shalisha Petiti here in the studio with Mark Minard, the director of Otterbein's production of Macbeth. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well.
Okay, thank you for being here. So for those who don't know, even though this is a really popular play by Shakespeare, could you give a little quick summary about what's it about?
Sure. The first thing I want to say is that the title is actually The Tragedy of Macbeth. And the reason that's important, it's not just semantic, is because many people know the story of Macbeth, and Macbeth, the character, does some fairly despicable things within the course of the play. Yep. However, he starts the play as a hero. He's a hero who falls and then tries to regain his humanity towards the end of the play. So telling the audience in the beginning that it is a tragedy helps them keep a frame of mind that's open to experience Macbeth as somebody who is a good man who falls rather than just a jerk who does lots of terrible things, and they can't wait to see him die. Right. So it's a very different story without the word tragedy in the title.
So you're saying kind of like you emphasize the fact that this is somebody who's going to completely mess up, so they have that expectation?
Yes, that he is the best and the brightest. He's John F. Kennedy. He is the best of the best of the best. He's the guy you go to when you're in trouble. He's the guy that always helps people out. And then he gets this prophecy from these three witches that he's going to become king one day. And suddenly he and his wife decide to act on it by taking matters into their own hands and not waiting. And they murder the king to get the crown. And that kind of sets them on a slippery slope into the descent of hell and madness and guilt and sleeplessness and doom.
Okay, pretty intense.
Yeah,
so
this is amazing.
So for most people who know the story, so we can say it's generally, most people would say it's a story about like ambition, guilt, and just the whole downfall. How would you say that Otterbein's interpreting it?
Well, I'm glad you asked the question because I actually don't think that ambition is a major theme of
the
play. No, I don't. The word ambition is only mentioned three times in the entire text of the play.
Okay.
We know from the play that Mr. and Mrs. Macbeth lost a child at some point. It's only mentioned the one time, but that's a very strong bond between a husband and a wife. I think that a lot of the motivation behind the taking of the throne is an attempt to provide security and to move past this horrible event that's happened in their life, because neither Macbeth or Lady Macbeth talk about the crown in terms of something they want for themselves. They only talk about it in something that they want for the other.
Okay.
And so their relationship really is, it's not the domineering relationship that we so often see. It's important to remember that in Shakespeare's day, Lady Macbeth would have been played by a 13 or 14-year-old boy.
Yes.
So it would have been a much more conventional relationship. It wouldn't be, you know, Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep. It would be Tom Hanks and, oh gosh, I don't know, who's a young actress that's popular today? The woman from Game of Thrones.
Okay.
It would be somebody much more age appropriate.
Yes.
Yeah, so it really is a very different play than just a tale about ambition. That's too easy,
okay,
I
so
think.
What word would you use to describe it?
I actually, in many ways, think it's a love story. I think that the story of the play is about these two people that have this perfect in sync relationship at the beginning of the play. They're good people that have what they need, but maybe not everything that they feel they need to be complete because of the loss of the child.
Okay.
And I think that for the other, they do these things to help kind of get their marriage back on track. And in the pursuit of that, they lose their humanity and they lose their relationship. And that the breaking of that really lovely, perfect, loving, committed relationship may actually be the tragedy that befalls Macbeth in the play, because his wife dies and he ends up losing everything he had in the pursuit of the thing that they thought they needed.
Okay.
So ambition tends to be equated with greed.
Usually.
And I think that once we equate it with greed, it's very difficult to paint Macbeth with a brush that an audience could be empathetic for. Or empathetic with. And I think it's vital that the audience see themselves in that character, because we've all been tempted to do a thing that we know we shouldn't.
True.
and very oftentimes for very good reasons.
Yeah, so this take of the play, I wasn't expecting this. It's completely different from what we usually get. So
yes.
It's more as if kind of like redemption in a way for
the play that we usually see is the victory of the noble Macduff over the mad, insane, evil tyrant Macbeth.
Yes.
And that's really not the story. The character of Macduff doesn't even come into the play until about halfway through it.
True.
And is only in a half a dozen scenes in the play. So I actually think we have to remember that it is the tragedy of Macbeth.
So in the production that Otterbein is putting on, so the focus is a lot on the allowing the audience to emphasize with Macbeth, would you say?
Yes, and one of the advantages of that with Shakespeare is that Shakespeare wrote for audiences that people could see. Like they performed the days mostly during the daytime, though Macbeth was first produced at an indoor theater at night. And so characters spoke directly with the audience in their soliloquies. We don't do that very often today. We tend to have people look up and stare out into space as if they're talking to themselves. But Shakespeare actually intended us to look the people in the eye that we're performing for and say, help me work out this problem. Should I kill this guy or not? Here's the reasons I should. Here's the reasons I shouldn't. What do I do? But as the audience, we don't get to answer back. And so what they get to see is somebody going through grappling with these choices with them, like actively engaging them. So I'm hopeful that the audience will respond well to this and be able to see themselves in the character of Macbeth.
Okay, so what kind of techniques or actions have you taken to be able to portray that to the audience while you guys have been rehearsing?
One of the things that Daniel Kunkel and I, he's the gentleman playing Macbeth, he's doing a very good job, that we talk about a lot is what's really the underlying problem? Actors very often go to anger and they go to tears because those are the two easiest things to do. And they're frankly the two least interesting things that an actor can do on stage. So we've really tried to be as specific as possible about what is the problem that he is solving in the moment. For instance, at some point in the play, Macbeth has his best friend killed and tries to have his best friend's heir killed. It would be very easy for an actor to look at that and go, oh, I'm going to murder my friend, ha, 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 and twirl their mustache. But it's much more interesting if the decision of whether or not to kill your best friend has the cost of, if I don't kill my best friend, then I lose my family. Because my family is myself and the queen and hopefully our future children. Banquo knows about the prophecies. If Banquo lives and Banquo doesn't get on our side, then we lose everything. So if it's a choice between my family and my friend and one of those things has to die, which one do I pick? That's a really juicy question to get an actor to ask and to see an actor ask. So we're taking the point that Macbeth doesn't want to have his best friend murdered, but that he has to preserve his family. That's much more interesting to me than somebody who's bloodthirsty and crazy wanting to have somebody killed.
Okay. So what would you say is the angle that you're going for with Lady Macbeth? With cousin past or other examples, you'll see that she'll be more like the kind of like the crazy wife trying to push the husband with like his masculinity and things like that. So
yes,
what do you think your angle is?
Yes, well, very often, again, I'm going back to Shakespeare in that since Lady Macbeth would have originally been played, you know, by a boy, but by a young boy in order to play a woman, it's clear that what Shakespeare is asking for is not someone who is older than Macbeth, not someone who is going to browbeat him into submission. Again, she only speaks of the crown in terms of what it will bring him. So it's a loving relationship. So what we're looking for is somebody who's using all the colors, because she does shame him at some points. She does emasculate him at other points, but she also encourages him, and she also says, no, come on, it'll be great, it'll be easy, we can do it. You're the man to do this. So we want to make sure that we're painting Lady Macbeth with all of the colors, especially at the beginning. It's important that nobody's crazy at the beginning of the play. Because then when we get to the sleepwalking scene, when we see the guilt that is possessing Lady Macbeth, that the dreams that she has nightly that force her to relive everything that she has done and cause her to walk from her bed and prevent her from having rest, are the things that eventually drive her to her own death. Not out of insanity necessarily the way we think of it, but out of a desperation of they just have to be made to stop somehow.
All right. So would you say that in the course of the play, will the audience experience Macbeth being continuously this hero, or will he, do you think that what you want for them to get him to turn into this anti-hero, or what?
Well, he definitely has to fall. I mean, tragedy has to result in the fall of a hero, like with Oedipus. The thing that's interesting and dynamic about the play that I rarely see produced is that he is continually in the fight of, God, how do I keep my humanity? How do I not let go of the last shreds of it? And still does, until at a certain point he's all in and just goes forward with it. And then at the end of the play, when he realizes that all of the prophecies of the witches will come true, including his downfall, he realizes that he has been fate's pawn, that he cannot change his future, but he decides to anyway. And so he ennobles himself again by saying, I will not accept what fate is handing me. I know I'm going to lose, but I will do everything in my power to hold on and to win. And that's something that I think is very admirable, so that even at the end of the play, after he has done all these deeds and must pay for them, absolutely, unforgivable deeds, that he still, knowing he can't ever get his humanity back, strives to do so.
So in this portrayal, how has there been any challenges throughout the process with it?
Okay, oh, yeah.
Or more specifically, what were more the major challenges?
Well, it's probably the single most difficult play to do in the English language.
Really? Okay.
Yes, it has what is arguably the most difficult scene in all of the Shakespeare canon in Act 4. One of the challenges of it, obviously, is that we don't experience Macbeth as a hero for anything but a very short space of time at the beginning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a half hour until, you know, before we kill the king, maybe less. So one of the things that's difficult for a modern audience is securing in their mind that this is a good man who is making a bad decision that leads him to his own destruction. And that's very difficult. Elizabethan audiences would have accepted that and would have seen that. And because we tend to know the story, we tend to go in thinking he's a bad guy.
True.
But the fact is that tragedies can't happen to bad guys. They just get their just desserts. Tragedies only can happen to good people who make bad choices.
So how have you worked around this problem?
Again, we look for the humanity in the play. We look for the importance of family. Family is a very important theme in the play for many of the characters. Duncan and his sons, Banquo and her daughter, in this case, rather than a son, Lady Macduff and her children, and of course Macduff and Macbeth and Lady Macbeth are a family, and they're a family again that's lost a child. So family is a really strong theme. And so that need to do something for the benefit of the other person in your relationship rather than yourself, I think, is one of the things that is key to fighting against this. Oh, it's the evil queen and king, and they're cackling around and, you know, planning interesting ways to kill people. They're really not. Lady Macbeth doesn't want anybody else to be killed. She's like, we killed Duncan, we're done.
Sure.
And Macbeth, being a general, is like, well, okay, we've killed the king, but now there's this person that might talk. We have to kill them. Well, hold on, how come this person isn't showing up when we're asking them to? We're the king. Maybe they know something. We better kill them, too. He does a lot of, frankly, very intelligent damage control if he were fighting a war. But he's not fighting a war. He's, you know, committed regicide.
And what are some things that you would say you're looking forward to?
I am really looking forward to the high school audiences. This is a great play. Shakespeare wasn't a fine artist. Shakespeare was a practical person of the theater that was trying to feed his family and, you know, if they had lights, keep his lights on. He wasn't trying to write high art. Shakespeare was popular entertainment. Macbeth is the Elizabethan equivalent of Game of Thrones. It really is. It was popular entertainment. Macbeth is a bloodbath. There's magic and witches and kings and betrayals and loyalties and all kinds of amazing things. It really is Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings. That's what Shakespeare represented, or romantic comedy. So I am really looking forward to the high school students' reaction, that I'm hoping that we can really expose them to the play. One of the tragedies of the public school system in our country, yes, political statement, is that there's very little arts funding. And that means that students have to end up reading Shakespeare rather than hearing it. And Shakespeare was never meant to be read. there were no complete copies of the plays. The plays weren't published until after he was dead. Even the actors in Shakespeare's company didn't get a complete script. Shakespeare was never, ever intended to be read. And giving a student a copy of a Shakespeare play and saying, here, this is one of the greatest works of art ever, really doesn't help them at all. It would be like handing me, who's musically illiterate, a Mozart symphony and saying, see, isn't this great? I can't read music. There's no possible way for me to appreciate the beauty of Mozart on the page. I don't have any context for it. In the same way that I look, if I were to look at the blueprint for a building, I would have no idea of knowing whether it was going to be safe or beautiful or what. So just because Shakespeare's written in English, we seem to think that people should be able to get the art from it off the page, and nothing could be further from the truth. It's a blueprint for a play. The play doesn't actually happen until you're in the audience experiencing it. And many people get turned off to Shakespeare because they have to read it, because we have no other recourse in the public school system. And it prejudices them against it. People think that they hate it, that they don't like it, or what's worse yet, that they're too stupid to really understand it. And Shakespeare's written in English. It really is written in English. There's a bunch of words that we maybe don't use anymore, but it's written in pretty plain English. So our job is to make that clear. And so I'm really excited about the potential reactions of our student audiences, that hopefully we can create some theater goers and let people know that, you know, there's some cracking good stuff that was written 500 years ago that's worth keeping alive.
All right. So those are all the questions that I had. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
No, come see the play. Really, come see the play. The sets are gorgeous. The sound design, the lighting design, the costumes are all beautiful. The actors have been working very hard. Everybody behind the scenes has been working really hard. It is the last performance that will be in the Campus Center Theater before its renovation. This is literally the last play that will be done in that building. And we're sending it off right. We've made some major structural changes to the theater. So if you think you know what that theater's like, you should come and check it out.
Because what kind of structural changes?
We have ripped out an entire stage floor and reconfigured the playing space for this production. We've given it entrances that it's never had before and made it much more intimate for the audience, because there's no stage. The actors literally can walk right up to the audience.
Okay, so yeah. It's going to be a lot of closeness.
It will be very, very, very intimate.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so opening night is October 18th.
Yes, please come.
All right.